Welcome to the Quest Express, your passport to immersive travel experiences and cozy conversations. For curious explorers who understand the art of slow travel, we're your go-to podcast. Every few weeks, we touch the heartbeat of a new city where we chat with artists, innovators, historians, and entrepreneurs who make each city come alive. The Quest Express is not just a podcast, it's your ultimate slow travel companion. It's an invitation to begin your own quest.
Olivia Barnett Brown is a 23-year-old Royal Television Society award-winning film master's student from Edinburgh. She specializes in documentary filmmaking, cinematography, and editing. Olivia works part-time at the Scotsman Picture House, a beautiful, nostalgic small cinema that feels like a home theater, which is located on the first floor of the Scotsman Hotel. Enjoy.
Hi.
Hello.
Well, Olivia, thank you for being here. I'm so excited to talk to you about your artist journey and everything else. Let's talk about where it began.
I was born in London, so I've got a really mixed accent. Like, everyone's always like, where are you from? Like, you sound so bizarre. Because I'm kind of from all over the place. So I was born in London in 2000, and then we moved to Edinburgh when I was about 3. But my mum's from Liverpool and my dad's from Glasgow. So kind of from all over the place. But I have lived in Edinburgh for most of my life.
Interesting. I do hear a little bit of Liverpudlian lilt in your voice.
Yeah, I used to live there for a little bit as well. So it really is like all over the place.
And so how did your parents meet?
They met when they were in university. So my mum was doing an art degree in Glasgow and my dad was just like living there, and they became flatmates, friends. And then they just became like together, I guess.
Very cool. Very cool. So what can you say about Edinburgh just in terms, I know it's always hard when you grow up in a place and it's everything that happens there is normal to you, but what appreciation do you have of the city having been other places?
Oh my God, so much appreciation for Edinburgh. Like, I think when I was a teenager, I used to be like, oh, get me out of here. Like, I want to go to London or something. But like, I didn't understand like how amazing this city is. Like, it's the best. I did my undergrad in Newcastle as well. So I was living away from Edinburgh for like 3 years. And it was such a treat every time I'd come back to see my friends and my partner. I'd be like, yes, because I'm just back in Edinburgh and I just loved it. Mm-hmm. I think because it's such a beautiful city and it's got such a rich and dark history as well, and it makes it just such a gorgeous place. And something else that I totally love about it as well is like everything is about half an hour's walk away, so you don't have to like travel too far to get places, and we've got really good buses as well, so it's not like a really big city where it's really hard to meet your friends and stuff, because like everyone's just sort of on your doorstep. With it still being a capital city as well.
In terms of Edinburgh having your heart, like coming back from Newcastle and everything, what is it about the city that has your heart? Why is it the best for you?
I think the people in it are fantastic. Like, there's such characters, and you really get to know them, especially if you work in the Royal Mile as well. I've done quite a lot of jobs like flyering and doing tourist stuff on the Royal Mile. So you really get to know a lot of the characters. But also the sort of general landscape environment of Edinburgh, at the same time as being big capital city, it's also feels very like countryside. I mean, you can just be like walking down the Royal Mile and then suddenly you're at the bottom and you're by Arthur's Seat, and it just feels like you're just in the wilderness. Arthur's Seat is this really big mountain that like it used to be, it was like part of a volcano like thousands and thousands of years ago, and now it's just like this giant hill and you can walk up it and it's really gorgeous.
Wow. You know what's interesting is that I've covered 3 cities now, Venice, New Orleans, and Edinburgh. And these are cities that I chose, but they're also very unique and culturally rich cities. But after you said that, I'm starting to notice a theme in between these cities is that the reason that people feel so passionate about them, because a lot of people like their hometowns, you know, but then there's other people who will never leave their hometown because they love it and everyone comes to it. It's like a magnet, right? It's kind of like with San Francisco. I moved there and I thought, well, this isn't my home, but it took me 20 years to leave. So My epiphany is, and let me know if you agree with this, I think that cities that have that special, that je ne sais quoi, on some level, they have the best of both worlds. Like Venice is a very small city, but it's also very cosmopolitan. Edinburgh, like you were just saying, it's small in terms of mass, but it has the countryside going for it and all the beautiful architecture. New Orleans is like a big city, but it's also like a playground. It's fun. It's a city of fun, but it's also family oriented, which people don't know. So I'm just seeing all of these weird dichotomies and complexities. It's kind of like if you're dating someone, you know, sometimes I shouldn't even go here, but like, let's say sometimes a man is like sneaking around and kind of has a harem. And he's like, he just wants to put like all three of these women into one woman, right? Well, yeah. That's how I feel about Edinburgh, Venice, and New Orleans. It's like they've got a lot of something. They've got different qualities that you don't find.
I see what you mean. That's such a funny way of describing it.
It's weird, yeah, right?
I totally see what you mean because it's just got everything in it.
Yeah.
And it's all kind of on your fingertips without you having to spend like so much money to get it and travel for hours, and it's all just there.
Right.
And I think that like really strengthens like communities as well, because I've got a lot of friends that like live in London now, and they always just kind of say about how lonely they are really, and that they don't get to see their friends very often, and you can't just be like, oh hey guys, let's go to the pub, because you've got to organize that like a week in advance so that everyone can like check their schedules and like check how to travel across town and stuff. Whereas here I can just be like, hey guys, let's go out, and then me and my friends will go get coffee or like go to the pub or whatever. So it's a lot easier to like see the people that you care about just kind of on a whim without having to be so cooped up in your own stuff.
I love that. Easier to see the people you care about. Yeah, there are other cities that I think it's harder. It's not that you can't find a sense of community, but it just doesn't lend itself as well. It's harder.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a question. Do you by any chance know any bagpipers in the Royal Mile? Because I just interviewed one a couple weeks ago. You know, you see a lot of the same characters, so I'm just curious if you might know him.
I don't think so. Okay. I usually just like, kind of like let them get on with it.
Okay, gotcha.
But yeah, I've not actually, I mean, there was like a pipe band at my school and stuff. Like it's very like traditional, but I've not actually spoke to any of the Royal Mile.
Yeah. But back to the harem analogy, it's kind of like you're saying to Edinburgh, okay, well, Edinburgh, we were an arranged marriage. I didn't choose you. I was born here, but I'm going to marry you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I would still marry you, you know, because obviously.
Because you've got it all.
Yeah, exactly. So just from my perspective, I've been to the UK many times, but I haven't been to Scotland, which is on my 2024 bucket list. I know, it's insane.
Oh, yeah, missing out. It's amazing.
So I'm really looking forward to going to Edinburgh. From my perspective, when I think of Scotland, obviously, I think of bagpipes. I think of kind of open and gregarious, warm people. I think of castles, Gothic architecture. And I think of ghosts, and just because of the storied long history of Scotland. So do you want to dip into that pool for a second? Do you have any ghost stories?
Oh my God, yeah, I actually have so many ghost stories.
Tell me, what was your first recognition? I mean, what was your first experience?
You were saying about like the history and sort of Gothic architecture and stuff. There's quite a lot of places in Edinburgh that are really well known for that. And when I was in school and stuff and was like a little emo, me and my friends all used to go and hang out in this graveyard called Greyfriars Bobby Graveyard or Greyfriars Kirk. And there's the dog outside. I think you might have heard of it because you're gasping, but it's such a gorgeous place. It's where J.K. Rowling as well got a lot of the names for like Harry Potter off some of the gravestones. I can't remember what name it was specifically, but it's on one of the gravestones. But that place is said to be really haunted, and we would all just like sit about in it and we'd see like orbs going past and stuff. And there was such a weird vibe in general. Greyfriars Kirk as well is like, it's on a hill. But it wasn't originally built on the hill. It's because in Edinburgh, we had such a bad case of the plague in way back when the plague was rife, that the bodies didn't have space to have graves anymore. So they were literally just piled up one on top of the other. So you're literally just walking on heaps of bodies, basically, in Greyfriars. Oh, It's quite horrible.
God. So Greyfriars Kirk, K-I-R-K.
Yeah, that's right. So Kirk just means church in Scots.
Okay, gotcha, gotcha. So it's basically, so I do know about Greyfriars Bobby because one of the walking tour guides told me about Greyfriars pub. And so the cemetery is nearby that pub?
Yeah, that's right. So it's sort of just outside the pub, really. And there's the little monument of the dog, which was the dog that was, he just loved his owner so much. And once his owner died, just came back and waited by that grave, like pretty much every single day. So there's a monument dedicated to him. And when everyone passes and they kind of rub his nose, which is a bit controversial because everyone's like, oh, you're ruining the monument. But it's like, it's some people believe it's like a good luck thing to rub the nose, but now all of like the paint's come off it and it looks a bit funny. So.
Oh my gosh. That's a great story though. Okay, so what other stories have you heard? Do you know of any ghost investigators in Scotland? Because I just feel like the more layered history is, the more that's happened there, obviously, the more likelihood for ghosts. Like New Orleans is extremely haunted. St. Augustine, I believe, is one of the older cities in the U.S. I think that's it.
Yeah.
And then Scotland, of course, going all the way back to the Vikings and then the Romans and yada, yada, yada. So what else? Have you had any encounters?
Yeah, well, actually, so my first like paid job ever once I left high school was I started being a tour guide for this company called Audrey Heaters, and they have vaults under the North Bridge. So the Scotsman Picture House where I work, the Scotsman Picture House is on the North Bridge and the vaults are on the South Bridge. But basically this bridge was built in the early 1800s and underneath the bridge was all of these vaults. So there's about, I think there's over 100 vaults and they're just like tiny rooms basically. They're underneath this bridge where like there's just lots of traffic and stuff on the upper ground. But these were built so that people could move their stuff into it. So it was for sort of like sales merchants. So they'd put all of their things in to store it. But the bridge was made really cheaply out of limestone. And basically in Scotland and Edinburgh, it just rains every day. It's horrible. Mm-hmm. So all the rain just kind of like seeped through the limestone of this bridge and all of the merchant stuff got all wet and gross. So they moved it out and the vaults were basically abandoned for a while. But like during this time as well, Edinburgh was illegal to be homeless basically on the streets of Edinburgh. So all of the homeless peoples just sort of moved into the vaults basically. And it just became horrible. It was essentially like a sort of underground ghetto. It was a really horrible place. It was completely in the dark as well because it's underground, there's no natural light, and they couldn't afford like proper candles as well. So they'd make them with animal fat and oils and stuff. So it was really dimly lit, crammed full of people, like tiny, tiny rooms as well. And there was just a lot of horrible things going on in there, like prostitution and sort of like men's gambling clubs with like sacrifices and stuff. So yeah, it was a really...
When was this again?
This was in the early 1800s.
Okay. And how long did that go on?
That went on for quite some years, actually. It kind of ended with the Great Fire of Edinburgh. So Great Fire of Edinburgh, I'm trying to remember what the date of that was. But yeah, that basically sort of drew everyone out of the vaults because it essentially cooked them all alive.
Oh my God. Well, there are your ghosts. Oh my God.
Yeah, so it kind of acted. So yeah, so the Great Fire of Edinburgh was in 1824 and it lasted for 5 days.
Oh my God.
So it sort of cooked out. So everyone in the streets was all getting burnt and stuff and people were running down to the vaults for safety, but they didn't realize that they were getting cooked alive.
Wow.
So it was absolutely horrible. But yeah, basically I used to flyer for this company and then I started doing tours for them as well. And when I first started, I was like, I just turned 18. I was like, I don't believe in ghosts. That was a bit silly because I was getting the interview and my old boss was like, you know, a lot of people start this job and they get really freaked out because they hear something or see something in the vaults and then they just quit. And I was like, that's never going to happen to me because I'm not weird. So, but I'm very much like, I'm open-minded. I'll sort of believe it when I see it, basically. And it was just all the time. It was constant. Like, the first thing that you feel when you go into the vaults is just this sort of very overwhelming vibe of, like, sadness, I guess. Like, you can really feel that a lot of terrible things sort of went down there, and everyone that you go down with, like, I remember I took my ex down there once, and he was such a big skeptic, and he was instantly like, oh god, it feels horrible in here, like, just the sort of general atmosphere. So there's that when you first go in, and most of the time it's all right, but there is quite a lot of days where it's been quite active, and that's always been really strange. There's been a lot of things that I've, like, seen and heard.
What have you seen? Tell me about those things. Because I definitely feel things. I've heard things before, but I've never seen anything. So I always thought you had to be almost like a psychic to be able to see.
Yeah, I thought that too. Until it just kind of kept happening to the point where it was like, oh, it's just the ghosts. Like, because you'd have to be doing your tour guiding. So you wouldn't want to, like, stop the tour and be like, oh, I'm scared of ghosts. So it just became so normal that you're just sort of giving your spiel and then you're like, oh, there's a ghost. And you just, you just kind of continue. But yeah, I remember, I think it was one of the first things I saw, actually. I was giving the tour, and I was facing one of, like, the sort of doorways of the room, and I just saw this, like, white head kind of thing, like, poke around the door, and it looked like, it was so crisp as well, which was what was really weird about it, and it was gone really quickly, but it was just like the sort of, it looked like the skin was really tight, and it was just sort of poked around the door, looked almost like a sort of burn victim, I suppose, which is really weird considering what I was saying earlier about the Great Fire. Yeah, that was quite horrible, and that was one of the first things I saw, so I was like, oh, that's weird. But amongst that as well, I've had my sleeve tugged in certain rooms. I've had rocks thrown at me, like little pebbles, over the stairs, and I was just watching them just, like, coming. There's been quite a few times as well where if you sort of, like, bang on the, like, if not, like, if you sort of knock on the walls with your fist, you'll get a different knock back, and you can just sort of communicate like that, like, back and forth for ages. So I got really into it. Like, I stopped being scared of it to the point where I was like, oh, this is just kind of fun. But it was until it started getting really in my head. Like, I was having dreams about this pretty much every night. Like, wow. I was having a lot of dreams about getting trapped in there, and just sort of living in this sort of, like, liminal reality forever. And it freaked me out so much that I was like, yeah, you know what? I worked there for like a year, and then I was like, I don't think I can do it anymore.
Yes.
Because it takes such a toll on you. But there was, yeah, it's always really weird talking about it with people, because I think it makes me sound like an insane person.
Not at all.
Oh, I saw all these ghosts and stuff.
No. Well, my understanding of it is that I interviewed a paranormal investigator from New Orleans, and my understanding of ghosts has always been they're simply spirits who probably had a traumatic death and are stuck in between. They never went to the light, so they're stuck. They're on this loop, like trying to resolve this trauma of how they died, or they get lost. They don't know where they are. It's sad.
Yeah. It's a really hard thing to, like, explain, because if you can't, like, just be like, oh, look, there it is, like, all the time, just something, it's so hard to make people sort of understand how you're feeling. But I think, like, similar to what you were saying, I think it's almost like a trapped energy. So, like, you know, when you go into a room and there's been two people in that room that have just had a really big argument, and it's like they've finished arguing and it's silent and it's really tense, and you go in and you can feel that atmosphere. I think that if you, like, go into a place where so much tragedy has happened, or something so dramatically awful has occurred, even, like, hundreds of years later, I think you can still feel that, and I think there's still energy, like, left over from that. And I think that was sort of what was happening in the vaults, really, because there was nothing good happened down there.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Has anyone ever thought to have some kind of, like, an exorcism or sage, like, healing ceremony, or, like, priest to send these spirits to the light? I would imagine that that is not done because it helps with the tour.
No, that's actually been done quite a bit. We've had a lot of, I think it's Most Haunted Live, they came to the vaults. There's been quite a few experiments where people have brought dogs down, and the dogs just go absolutely ballistic, because they get, like, animals just, I feel like they just have, like, a higher sense for these things, and they just wouldn't go in certain rooms. And there has been, like, exorcisms as well in it. So there's one room in the vaults, which is we call it the Stone Circle room, and basically this there's a Wiccan circle that's sometimes still practiced in the vaults. They've been practicing in there for about 40 years, and there was a room that they were just getting a lot of activity in, and quite negative, sort of, I hesitate to say, like, demonic, but sort of, yeah, like, dark energy, I guess. So they got this priest in to come and sort of exorcise the room. But it just went terribly. Like, it was kind of the opposite reaction from whatever was in the room. So this priest made this stone circle to allegedly trap the sort of evil spirit thing in the circle, so it's in there forever. So we usually tell people to not go in the stone circle,
oh, but
like people like to go in just to see. I think it's quite hard to tell. I feel like it's slightly hotter on the inside of the circle, which is really weird.
There's been
quite a lot of things as well. Like, I was doing a tour once and I was like, yeah, you know, I don't personally go in the circle because I'm a bit scared, but you guys can go in if you want to go. And this little girl, she must have been about 10, she went in the circle. She had a long raincoat on, she had her sleeves down the whole tour, and it was all fine when she went in the circle. But after the tour, her and her mum came up to me and they were like really annoyed. I was like, oh, why are you so annoyed? And she was like, look at my daughter, and rolled up her sleeve and there was three massive scratch marks down her arm. It was so bizarre. And she was like, how does this happen? This does not make sense. Like, how have you done this? What, this isn't fair. Like, it was, oh, it was so bizarre. It's like, I have no way to explain this.
Oh my God.
You weren't me because you went in the circle.
Oh my God. This is okay. I just need to collect myself for a second. This is intense.
Yeah, it's horrible.
On Thursday, we'll pick up where we left off and we'll be introduced to the beautiful Scotsman Picture House, which used to be a printing press. If you're interested in joining the waiting list for trips to Edinburgh, New Orleans, or Venice, shoot us a line at host@thequestexpress.com. And just put waiting list in the subject line and the city that you're interested in. See you on Thursday. Bye.